Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Oscar Ramos, and I'm going to be your host for today. China Startup Pulse is your looking glass into the Chinese and Asian startup ecosystem. For anyone interested to start up, invest, join a startup, or simply want to learn more about what new trends and best practices are developed in this part of the world. Today, we're going to talk with Fei Yao, COO and co-founder of QLC, a new tech startup that is helping their users to adapt to the future of work by embracing the future of learning. We'll talk about her personal journey, daughter of an immigrant family that pivoted from a very successful traditional career in management consulting to a startup. She will disclose some of the bumps on the road that made that journey interesting, some of the learnings that they had, some of the new things that they discovered through this hands-on experience by learning by doing. She will also share what's the future of work, why do we need a new way to work, what new roles are going to be created, and how the current education system is not the answer for that. How they found inspiration in an education system developed hundreds of years ago to create the future of education. Additionally, she'll explain how this is not just staying in education and working, and how they are also being part of the shape of the future of living. They will describe how their own team is living that new model of operations, and how with a 12-people team distributed across 5 different cities, they're able to run a company in total sync. Without further ado, let's talk with Fei Yao. Welcome, Fei. So today we have with us Fei Yao. She's a COO and co-founder of QLC. She was born in Shanghai. Now it's back in Shanghai, but she was actually raised in Australia, where she was in a very traditional career path. She studied engineering and business in a top business school in Australia, and then went to work in management consulting. But in that process, there was a small change. So she took a study abroad program in the UK, where she faced unplanned difficulty, macroeconomic circumstances change, and everything that she saved for this study abroad program was suddenly worth 2/3 of the original value. So she faced a very entrepreneurial problem of lack of resources, and she used a very entrepreneurial solution to try to find a way to solve that. And there were plenty of competitions, business competitions, startup competitions, and she was good at that. She started to participate in some of them, and she basically subsidized some of her study and travels and parties and everything that she was doing in Australia. But then when she was back home to normal life and returned to the corporate management consulting work, one day that changed. And well, there was something that made you think about this past experience in the UK and you wanted to do something different. What happened, Fei?
Yeah, so as you were saying, Oscar, I did follow a very, very traditional career path, which is quite common for immigrant families in Australia. So, you know, your parents went through all of this struggle to, you know, go to another country, make sure that you had the best education, the best resources at hand. And it's so that you could have a more stable and predictable life, which I did for a long time. Went to very good schools. I had a very good job as well. But for me, what I realized from my experience with exchange was that I valued opportunity that came out of uncertainty. I like the creativity that came out with doing entrepreneurial small ventures. But for me, a lot of the time, I didn't think of it as a possibility for a lifestyle. I thought it was like a hobby. You know, some people go and play soccer. Some people go to the gym. I like to sell things on the side. Or, you know, at one stage, I set up a small hostel based on my experiences backpacking around Europe. But this was all things I did on the weekends after work while I was still working as a consultant at Accenture. But the main change that happened for me at the time was when I actually opened my eyes and realized that it could be a pathway to be a full-time entrepreneur. So what the tech boom had done in the US meant that I was actually getting on my Facebook feed a lot of articles from TechCrunch. This is a whole world that was completely new to me. I did not know that people did this sort of stuff for a living, you know, like hearing about the dot-com stuff. That's something people did in America. I didn't know anything about that. Like, how did people do that? But then you'd suddenly read about like the Airbnb founder stories and realize, hey, like everyday college dropout people who had a scarcity in resources managed to make their hobbies a business. And that's where I guess I really started actually thinking about it. All of these ventures I had been doing at the side, I probably could have taken it bigger. In fact, I was probably doing what Airbnb was doing at the time, but I just didn't know the idea of scaling. I wasn't in an environment where it encouraged me to actually do these things. So what I ended up doing was thinking about problems that I had at hand. I started doing a lot of reading into this, which actually led me to found my first startup. Well, it's actually probably my fifth one, but first one in the tech space, which was a furniture platform called Couchello. As luck would have it, I met my current co-founder, Will, while I was working at Accenture. So we were probably at the same place in life where, you know, we'd both done the whole steady route, gone through corporate, gone through good schools. And in consulting and reading all of these articles about people doing really fascinating things in the tech space and wanting to venture into that particular space.
It's a very interesting thing what you share right now, because a lot of people believe that starting a business is something that one day you wake up and you have this brilliant idea and you make it happen and it works and it's overnight success. No? And you're just sharing, like, the first thing I'll call a startup was actually my fifth project that I developed with a co-founder, etc. So in that process, you learn different things, you experiment different things. How does it feel? I mean, when you go in this process, and you also mentioned something that it's quite interesting. No, we see a lot of entrepreneurs that they come from immigrant families. So how was this process personally and from a family point of view of you going through, I mean, one idea to another one? What was the feedback of your family, no, after all of this effort in providing the best education and the best opportunities for you?
Well, my parents actually never really understood it. They're like not entrepreneurial people at all. Well, like, they did actually run a shop for many years in Sydney, but, you know, I wouldn't say they did it out of entrepreneurial abilities. It was more out of necessity. This was a very stable way for an immigrant family to actually make money in Australia. But yeah, so all of the side hobbies that I had been doing beforehand, my parents knew about it, but for them, it's almost like, is this the best use of your time to be selling this on eBay? Could you be studying a little bit more, maybe? And when I was running the hostel business, my mum was like very worried about, like, was I breaking any laws? Like, are you sure these people can be living here? So there was definitely a lot of questions around it. When I actually decided to quit my job and pursue doing a startup full time, I guess, in a way, I convinced my parents that it would be okay because I had saved up a bit of money beforehand. So for them, it was almost like, you know, I'm going to be taking this 1 year sabbatical from work to pursue a hobby. And they thought maybe it would be a bit more fruitful than, you know, just plain traveling for a year. So after we had finished that 1 year of the startup life, luckily, you know, we had raised a bit of money in that time. So I was able to paint out the picture for my parents that it was going to be a career option as opposed to just 1 year of fluffing around and trying to figure out what I was doing in Singapore, which was actually where I had moved to.
But that's what they thought, because Couchello is not QLC. Is that where you found your co-founder?
Yes.
Or one of your co-founders, but it's not QLC. So what happened in that process from Couchello to QLC, and how did you move from one idea to the other one? Because it's very different. I mean, you went from online furniture to a company that is basically redefining the future of work.
As I had mentioned earlier, I had actually moved over to Singapore after I had quit my job. And what actually happened was that, you know, we'd been running Couchello part-time while we were at Accenture in our consulting jobs. So this is my co-founder, Will, and I, for about nearly a year. You know, we had built a product with some offshore developers. We had made a few sales through the app. And we kind of got to a point where we're like, all right, so what do we do with this now? We did some research online. Oh, there's this thing called accelerators. Let's go and apply for this thing called an accelerator. We got an offer. We pretty much quit our jobs, packed our bags, and moved there overnight. So when we got to Singapore, it was very different. It had a much more mature startup landscape than Australia had. And I was just overwhelmed with the number of people doing really cool things and interesting things in Singapore. But what that also meant was we realized that it was very naive to think that Couchello, the furniture app, could actually work in Singapore. You know, we probably spent about 2 to 3 months talking to people. We brought a few vendors on board, but it was very difficult to see where it could actually go in that market. So we were in the middle of the accelerator and we kind of took a step back to have a think about why we were in Singapore to begin with. Like, you know, what led us to just move to Singapore overnight with no real plan about where this would mean our career was going, where this would mean our startup was going. And it made me realize that it was actually a deeper, more personal problem I was solving. It was not about the fact that I wanted to make Couchello work for Singapore. It was about the fact that I was so desperate to get out of Australia and get out of my job, that I was willing to take any opportunity that came knocking at the door. I didn't know what an accelerator was at the time. I didn't even know what it could offer me. In fact, I think when we decided to make the move, we hadn't even gotten the offer for the accelerator yet. We had gotten like a, you might be accepted in a few weeks sort of offer. So we decided to actually just go there for that and see how it'd run. But it made us realize that if we were so willing to drop everything for a maybe sort of opportunity, there were a lot of other people who were just waiting for a maybe sort of opportunity as well. And that's pretty much the basis of how we founded QLC.
It's a very, I mean, that actually connects very much with this start of a company when you feel your own pain. And there's a moment when you kind of question yourself. I mean, do this problem that I have is more common than what I think? And there's other people that that has it. So you pivot your company and you change radically in Singapore. I mean, it basically became a totally new company. And new company, you also went to another accelerator and another city. So you came to Shanghai, and after learning a little bit about the startup ecosystem and the startup atmosphere in Sydney, Singapore, you came to Shanghai. So how was the startup community here? How was the startup ecosystem?
I think one of the things that blew my mind about moving to Shanghai, and for me, it was quite a personal thing as well, because, you know, I was able to spend a lot of time and see family that I wasn't able to connect with growing up in Australia, was the scale of things. Like, when we moved to Singapore and we started understanding a bit more about the startup landscape, it's very much, you know, build it in Singapore, but you pretty much got to start thinking about it week two, how this could work for the rest of Southeast Asia, or has this product worked in the US before? It was never a very Singaporean business. But when we started meeting businesses in China, we realized that they were operating on a completely different scale. They're not worried about whether or not this is even going to work in other markets. They're not worried about what's happening in the US. They're kind of doing their own thing. Even, you know, even discovering things about like how, you know, the progression of the bike companies. When we first got here, like we saw a couple of bikes. 3 months later after CA, like we couldn't walk on the road without seeing like a million bikes in place.
So that's quite interesting, because QLC is a lot about the future of work. And when people talk about the future of work, they mean a lot of things. But one of the things that that kind of creates that need for a change in how we work and how work is going to be defined is speed. So as a company that is working in redefining and helping people join this wave of the future of work, why do we need future of work outside? I mean, China is very obvious. It's a developing market. You need to change things. But why do globally we need a future of work?
So,
or new work?
Yeah. So from, you know, the way I see it is there's so much happening right now in the way people work. Like the landscape has just changed at an unprecedented speed. And this has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, there's all this AI coming out. You know, you're always hearing about how like jobs are being replaced. In fact, the most in-demand skills for jobs right now are jobs that didn't even exist 5 to 10 years ago. So this really puts a challenging place as to where universities actually stand now, because if the most in-demand jobs have skills that universities are not teaching, where are people actually going to learn the skills required for these jobs? On top of that, you know, the fact of the matter is young people these days, they're only staying at their jobs for 2 to 3 years, which is really challenging the traditional perspective of, you know, you go into a job, you stay the rest of your life pretty much until you retire. You're just constantly climbing that ladder and waiting for that next promotion. But if people are changing jobs every 2 to 3 years, what does that mean for reskilling? You've got a lot of other things happening, like, you know, more people want to have jobs where it includes more travel. You know, the cost of travel lowering, and, you know, players like Airbnb coming into the space and lowering the costs of discovering new places means that more people want to work overseas. More people want to travel and work at the same time. People want to do things that they actually identify with. So you've got a lot happening in the landscape at the same time. So what does that mean in terms of educating the market about what the future of work looks like if all of these things are happening in parallel?
So there's a lot of change in the skills. There's a lot of change in terms of expectations. And that's some of the characteristics that people use to describe a very specific group of the workforce, which are millennials. That there's a, I mean, my generation, like slightly older people, there's a lot of comments and people like joke about it, complain about it. What do you think this clash is happening?
So I actually am not fond of talking about millennials. The way I see it is that the reason why millennials have been, you know, brought up in the media or like, you know, all those articles that you read online is just because they're such a powerful element of the workforce right now. I think like, you know, millennials are going to be something like 80% of the workforce in the next 5 years. So, you know, whether or not you like it, they matter because this is what the labor market is going to be made up of. And you actually think about the facts. They are mostly digital natives. They're being brought up in an era where people are actually changing jobs every 2 to 3 years. So the expectations are completely flipped compared to that of the traditional employers where they have the mindset where they might think, oh, you know, I came into this job and I had to work very hard, you know, do the grind, do the 9 to 5, meet or tick all these boxes to be promoted to where I am now. But you have these younger people coming in who think, you know what, I don't even know if I want to be where you are. So why do I have to fit into your expectations about getting there when that's not where I'm even sure I want to be? What millennials might care more about is, you know, the learning, the opportunity, the training, like they will take pay cuts in order to make sure that they are maximizing the number of new experiences and learnings that they're taking from a certain type of role. So it's really up to a lot of the time the employer to kind of do a bit of reflection on what their company actually offers. Is it actually suitable for the labor market now? Because at the end of the day, the talent is what's going to build the company. And if you are not actually able to provide roles and experiences that matter to the talent, then how are you going to actually run the company?
So at the end, it's about the compensation that you feel that you receive for your contribution to companies, for your contribution to the organizations that you are devoting your time to. So it's a move from a traditional, more physical, asset-driven type of world to a virtual, digital, knowledge-driven type of economy.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you say that. It's almost like the idea of what compensation is has changed. You know, if traditionally you go to a job and your compensation is just talking about how much you get paid, but you've got people now who want to be compensated with a good experience and multiple learning. So it's completely challenged what people know about the idea of compensation.
We're talking a lot about the future of work. But every time, I mean, almost in every conversation about the future of work, we talk about new skills. We talk about new roles. We talk about new ways to operate. And obviously, you cannot think about the future of work without talking about the future of education and how education is changing. And actually, that's what you do. I mean, you're a company that has a tagline about the future of work, but you're an edutech company that changes how people learn with a very strong connection to work. So how is the future of education?
Yeah, so it's really interesting that you bring that up because one of the things that we always talk about in my team is that education used to be a one-time investment you make at the start of your career. You do your bachelor's degree, you might go and do a master's degree, but the market was moving at a pace back then where, you know, if you learned things at this point in time in your life, you are confident that those skills and that knowledge would be relevant for the next 50 years. But that's no longer the case. You learned something last year and chances are things have changed this year. So what does that mean for the role of education and universities in your life? You still have really great assets that you have, like, you know, how to learn. But what about the actual tangible skills that you're using on a day-to-day, week-by-week, month-by-month, year-by-year basis? And that's sort of what we're challenging here. It's keeping people refreshed. We want to really implement the idea of lifelong learning. It's not about what you do at the start of your career. It's about how you can keep maintaining your skills and having that mindset that you need to invest in your learning throughout the rest of your career as well.
Education is changing and you're talking about how education needs to change in terms of how often it needs to happen.
Yeah.
But how is the learning process itself changing? How is this education experience now different?
Yeah.
In a traditional model, you have a class and that class happens most of it over time.
One of the things that, one of the principles of how we actually built QLC was around the traditional medieval system of apprenticeships. So, You used to have these master craftsmen who, you know, go and teach people how to make shoes or like cobblers or, you know, how to cook, how to be a metal worker, how to be a leather worker. And how it used to happen in Europe was that, you know, you would go and be an apprentice for a master at that particular skill for, you know, 7 years. You'll do everything for them, live with them. And parents used to actually send their children to go and learn with these masters. So after a certain amount of time, you learn the basis of these skills, and then you would go and be what they call a journeyman. You would go and offer your skills to other people in the community or, you know, across the country that would need such a skill. And after another certain amount of time, then you would be qualified enough to become a master of that skill and, you know, potentially open up your own shoe shop or metal shop or leather shop or whatever it would be. And the reason I bring this up is because this is actually what the current education system is moving towards. We work with universities every single day, and the push right now is around project-based learning. It's about work-integrated learning. They are wanting to move away from the theory and actually going into practical experience. And this ties very well back into the idea of lifelong learning, because it's not just about the skills refresh. It's not just about the theory. It's about constantly being able to putting it into practice.
That's quite interesting. It's a very good example of how innovation can come from everywhere, and how sometimes when you can learn from other industries, you can learn from the past. I mean, you're basically redefining the future of work, looking into how, like, the future of education for work, looking into how education for work was executed like hundreds of years ago. I mean, one of the things that for sure has changed is the types of things that you can learn, and the type of things that are actually being required by the market right now. So what type of things is people learning through QLC?
So at QLC, the main skills we focus on right now are those needed by an early stage startup. So we offer tracks in digital marketing, business development, data analytics, with, you know, plans to expand into other areas such as tech focus, developer focus skills as well. And the reason for that is this actually addresses the gap in the market that I was talking about earlier. This is actually some of the top skills that are actually being hired for. So we want to make sure that people are learning, but it's also learning stuff that is relevant. These are the things that people are interested in.
So, I mean, these are roles required by startups, but if there's one trend in the corporate world right now, is that every organization is realizing that they are a digital company. They cannot ignore internet and digital economy to design their business model, to design how they operate, but they also want to become like startups. They all want to have this new blood, this energy, this dynamism on how they do things. So what are the types of companies that you're working with? Are you only working with startups that need to train like their new talent or their employees? Or are you working with other types of organizations?
Yeah, so we started off with just working with startups, social ventures, very small companies, you know, who were focused on building their product and focused on growing. But as you mentioned yourself just then, there's so many corporates out there right now who are trying to do their own internal projects. They're trying to innovate within themselves and actually figure out how they can, you know, build new offerings or offer new insights into the existing product lines or build out new ones as well. So that's actually where we fit in with some of these like more interesting companies trying to, I hate using this phrase, but, you know, disrupt themselves as well. So we're working with some, you know, Uber, LinkedIn. I'll kind of say they fall into the bucket of somewhere between traditional corporates and startups, because they're really large tech giants who have well-established processes, but are still in the mindset of trying to build new product lines to make sure that they're staying relevant in the market as well.
We've talked about the future of work. We've talked about the future of education. But QLC is also a living example of the future of living and how everything is changing. We're 12 people in your team living in 5 different cities. And you're also joining a movement that is defining a new way to live and define where do you work.
The lucky thing about this is that I've managed to create a lifestyle for myself where I'm able to marry up my two passions of, you know, traveling and focusing on my career in terms of building a business. It's interesting you bring that up, because, you know, we're going through this change in the market right now where there's this new idea called co-living. If you had tried to do this travel and work lifestyle, say, 10 to 15 years ago, your only option would have been hostels, which is not sometimes the most ideal environment when you're getting to a stage of your life where you want to focus on your career, not just pure backpacking. But in the last few years, co-living has evolved out of co-working spaces where you've got entrepreneurs from around the world who are freelancers who choose to go to different cities to build out a product or build out a specific business in different workspaces. But then it's evolved into sharing not just the workspaces, but their living space as well. So it's not just working with like-minded people, you're literally living with like-minded people as well. But what it also does is that it offers a lot of flexibility around where your location is. You're going to see a lot of players online, you know, for example, Rome or Remote Year, where you can actually live in these different locations around the world on a month-by-month subscription basis. So it's not just about signing a lease for a year in a different country. You can sign up for a lease that will offer you multiple countries, multiple cities, and multiple living spaces for yourself, which definitely suits the changing lifestyle right now.
Okay. And how is QLC integrating all of this together into one single platform? And who are you working with right now? I mean, you talk about the companies that you're working with, but how is people, I mean, what's the profile of people that is looking for this future of in your platform?
QLC is a remote internships platform that really offers career changers or people looking to experience new skills, ideas, or companies in one place. So at the moment, we work with about 40 universities from around the world to redefine what their curriculum actually looks like in the place of the changing world of work. So we're offering, you know, projects in digital marketing, data analytics, business development to really suit what they are trying to do to keep an updated curriculum. Our vision for the future of work is about how we can actually start integrating the living, the education, and the working elements. It's the way the market is moving right now is not about segregating all of these things. We want to think about how we can marry up this idea of having internships into a platform that suits career changes or lifestyle changes in general. So an example of this is looking at my team right now in itself. We're a remote team that operates across 5 different cities, 12 people, and we've also got about 3 or 4 full-time digital nomads. So what that means is they're not actually focused on living in one city working remotely. They're actually hopping around every couple of weeks to go and live in new cities while working full-time with QLC. The way we run our projects right now is a very, very similar mindset. The reason why people are able to go and access these opportunities and internships from all around the world is because the projects are hosted 100% remote. What that means is from their onboarding to their learning materials to their complete interaction with the businesses that they're working with is 100% online. And this is a skill, this is a type of a way of working that the market is moving towards that universities can't actually offer right now. Institution of, you know, hundreds of years that have relied on people coming to their campus. And what we can actually do for them is offer them a way to expand their presence into different cities by offering these remote experiences as well. QLC is really trying to change the way career changes or people learning new things approach getting experiences.
How can people contact you?
You can send me an email anytime, faye@qlc.io. By the way, QLC stands for Quarter Life Crisis.
Thank you very much, Faye. Great pleasure to have you today and share with us lots of new concepts about how the future is coming.
Yeah, thanks, Oscar. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to take a minute to thank you all, our followers, anybody that is listening or sharing this podcast. You are the reason why we keep interviewing people to give you insights of what's happening in China. Additionally, we'd like to thank the production team that makes this podcast possible. Eva, Summer, Chris, Dave, Gibb, and also my co-hosts, Ryan and William. Finally, I'd like to thank the sponsors that support this podcast. China Accelerator was the first accelerator ever launched in Asia, part of the SOSV network of accelerators. with 7 accelerators across Asia, Europe and America in the verticals of internet, software, hardware and biology. Chan Accelerator was the first accelerator in Asia, part of the SOSV network, running 7 accelerators across America, Europe and Asia in the verticals of software, hardware and biotech. Chan Accelerator is a 3-month program that invests in all the companies that are accepted. During this 3-month program, you get access to our community with more than 300 mentors and 150 startups that graduated from the program in the past. We help your company access the Chinese market, or we help your company expand into other markets from China. People Square is the original co-working space in China, a real home for startups. With more than 30 locations, it is designed by and for entrepreneurs, for small teams and large teams. It's a perfect environment no matter what you're working on. Founded by Bo Zhang, an entrepreneur himself that understands what startups really need and created the best community for anyone building a company. Learn more at peoplesquare.com.